Hello, this is Dean Gocher. I'm founder and director of the Institution for Authority Research. I encourage you to trust in the Lord with all your heart, lean not to your own understanding, and in all your ways acknowledge Him. Then He's the one who directs your paths. That's Proverbs 3, 5, and 6. This program is about Genesis 3, 1 through 6, the dialectic process, which is all about negating Proverbs 3, 5, and 6, trusting in the Lord with all your heart, leaning not to your own understanding, in all your ways acknowledging the Lord and letting Him be the one who directs your steps. This diaprax, as I call it, this new world order, this so-called new world order, is all about a paradigm. They call it a paradigm shift. It's not a shift, it's a change. It's actually a paradigm of shiftiness, of deception. And this is this program is explaining the practice of it, praxis of the dialectic process. Well, didactic is just one. There's only one right answer. 2 plus 2 is 4, cannot be any other number, and that applies to all the laws of nature. That doesn't mean that we find out new things in nature, but those laws are always established. There's no day that goes by that gravity says, you know, I think I'm going to change the laws. So that they're established by God. And the only time they can be changed is if God Himself does that change. That would be called a miracle. Now, the dialectic has been around since the garden. It is the very steps of Genesis 3, 1 through 6. What it does, it ties itself to our feelings and our thoughts. In other words, our thoughts are towards our feelings, which are in disagreement or antithesis to the Father's position. In a classroom, I would simply try, if I'm doing the dialectic process, try to reveal to the students that their position is not their position. Their position or their belief is their Father's position. They simply believed in their Father's commands, and because of the threat of judgment, they embraced those beliefs, and therefore they are now subject to those beliefs. In other words, their will is not to themselves. Their will is to a higher authority than their own human nature. In other words, their sensuousness of the moment in the here and now. And so, as I shared in the last prior programs, the dialectic has three steps, thesis, antithesis, synthesis, and they always recycle around and around and around again, that the synthesis becomes another thesis, and on it goes. Well, if you start with a father, you can't do that cycle. If you start with a father, he's the one who gives the children a command, a position. And then if they decide to follow their feelings, that would be antithesis. The father would be the thesis. He'd be the position creator, created the children, created the laws, created the environment for them to live within, subject to a higher authority, top-down system, patriarchal paradigm, all ways to describe this way of thinking and acting. And so, therefore, the child is caught between his feelings of the moment, the natural inclination of the child is to relate with the world. And the reason for that is because we all come into this world with this approach, pleasure, avoid, pain spectrum. It's a spectrum or a continuum. And so we weigh the worth of our day based upon the amount of pleasure versus the amount of pain. And you notice that if you practice something over again, it's pleasurable the first time and then it gets boring, that you're never satisfied with pleasure in a given absolute condition. That's the purpose for change. Change is changing the environment, so the pleasure is always augmented. It's supported and it's increased. The Bible says, as hell is never full, the eyes are never satisfied. And that is because of the way we are created. God gave us the ability to approach pleasure and avoid pain. We have a nervous system. And in this program, I want to talk about that nervous system. Now, there are four systems in our body that deal with pain. It's a very complex system. If you want to study something and never run out of something to study, well, that would be one area to go. What I focus on, because it's our human nature, lovers of pleasure more than lovers of God. In other words, the lovers of pleasure are actually the heresiarchal paradigm. Heresy article simply means change. And so children are constantly seeking change. A baby is looking at something, and then it doesn't take them very long, maybe a second, and they're looking at something else or looking at something else. And then I just say two-year-olds are druggies. They are just simply chasing this neurotransmitter, this chemical I want to talk about tonight, and that is approaching pleasure and avoiding pain. Because pain can also, it doesn't have to necessarily be a sharp object. You can also have pain by the absence of pleasure. Say you're aware that your friends are going to go to the park and have a good time, and you can't go. Now, that's pain. See, and so you can become very stressed out, and you know, I'm going to die, and all that kind of stuff comes out of your mouth. Well, you're not going to die, but that's how the pain you're going through in your mind, the imagination. Because the imagination of your heart is always to approach pleasure and avoid pain. Now, when God hardwired us, and we all come this way, we come with a nervous system of pleasure and pain. We have endings of our nerves that detect different kinds of pain, same with different kinds of pleasure. And those senses are touch, taste, sight, smell, sound. And we could not become aware of the world around us if it wasn't for the nervous system. So you touch something or taste something or see something or whatever, a nerve is activated. That nerve is impulse, ionized, deionized, chemicals involved, potassium, calcium, all kinds of ionization going on, very complex system. And that impulse, it goes from the tip of the finger, the tongue, down a nerve to connect with another nerve on its way to the brain. So you would become aware of what was going on around you. You would not be able to know what was going on around you if it wasn't for this nervous system. So you the nerve gets to this end, or the impulse gets to the end of this nerve, and then a chemical is released. Your body naturally produces, they call these neurotransmitters. And one of them I want to focus on is dopamine. It seems to be the major one in regards to pleasure, the wanting of something. And so when it's released or emancipated or liberated, and it's important to understand, those words are key to understanding the dialectic process. Liberation theology is found right there in that chemical. Our desire to approach pleasure is found in that chemical. The lust of the flesh, lust of the eyes, and the pride of life are found in that neurotransmitter being released or emancipated or liberated into that synaptic gap. It then floats across, hits a receptor at the other end of that gap and the end of a nerve, and then that nerve is triggered to send that information on up to the brain. Then you have a trillion nerves or neurons in your brain, and then some of those will have 10,000 dendrites, which means it's like a tree with many branches, and those dendrites then connect with other nerves. So you can have one nerve connecting with multiple number of nerves, and in that connection of those nerves, there's a synaptic gap, and dopamine's released as well. So once that happens in the brain, then you become aware of something that's pleasurable in the environment. Now, all habitual drugs are tied to dopamine. They imitate it, they help emancipate it, they help prevent its reuptake so it stays longer in the synaptic gap. All drugs have different effects on all of these neurotransmitters, but all habitual drugs are tied to dopamine, including caffeine and tobacco. In fact, the first time a person takes cocaine, they're never going to have that rush again. I really see it as just opening up a part of the brain that's just, it's there, the nerves are there, but all of a sudden they're exposed, they're brought alive, and it's such a rush, you'll never have that rush again. It's an introduction to the brain of that chemical. And they call it chasing the dragon. The person will get pleasure from taking cocaine, but never be satisfied. He's always rushing or pursuing to get that rush, and he'll never have that first rush again. Same with morphine and all kinds of drugs. So that's why a person's never satisfied. The drug pushers will give a kid a pill on the corner, freebie, you know. But once that's such a rush, they will keep coming back, and they'll start selling what they have to get the cash, and eventually they're in mom's purse. Then they're out robbing cars, and they're doing whatever it takes to get the funds to support that habit. So they're hooked on this dopamine, but it's artificially stimulated. It's not natural. Now, the natural would be the smell of fresh baked bread, beautiful sunsets, pictures, things that we see. We take a picture of our family, love your family. Every time you look at that picture on the desk, you get a dopamine moment. And same thing with compliments. That would be the pride of life, because you're able to control the environment that stimulates the dopamine. Say there's a gratifying object. Say you purchase something, a car, and everybody goes, wow, you know, they like that car, because every time they look at it, they get a dopamine rush, but it's your car. And so you get a dopamine rush just because you own that car. You get it because you see the car, because it is yours, but people compliment you and you get a dopamine rush as well. And so it's our natural inclination the body to stimulate the dopamine when it comes in contact with a gratifying object. You may not be aware of it being gratified the first time. I remember the first time I took ice cream. My parents waited long enough I could remember it. Took me into town, and we were raised on a farm, and I remember at the stand there, the person handed me the cone, and I took it in my hand, and I put my tongue on it. But the experiences we have with pain, with fire and cold, is that you can actually take a block of ice, and if you're not aware of its ice, put your hand on it, it can feel like a stove. And so when I touched my tongue to that ice cream, never having, I evidently never experienced it this way before, when I touched it, I felt the pain. Evidently, the pain neurons got, the nerve got to the brain before the pleasure did. And I remember pushing the ice cream away, and I felt betrayed. I thought, how can my parents do this to me? You know, I'd heard about, this was back in the early 50s, I'd heard about, people using cigarette lighters on their kids, and I thought, well, how cruel. How could you? And it was just a nanosecond, but total sense of betrayal by my parents. And then as I was pushing the ice cream cone away, then the dopamine got there. And it was like, whoa, if my sister had been grabbing for that, we'd have had a fight. That was good stuff. And so that's our body. It's just hardwired by God so that we would prevent the pain that would kill us and appreciate the pleasure that God's created, the good things of life. But it's our nature to want the gratifying things in the environment. And when you're learning, that dopamine's involved, because they know that whatever you're memorizing or when you're experiencing something, that information is stored in that synaptic gap or in those dendrites. And so the first time you go through something that's pleasurable, you're getting dopamine from it. But if you repeat it over and over again, you don't get that dopamine. And that's why things get boring after a while. You doing your homework is boring, and you start daydreaming. Because we can, in our own imagination, create an environment or a situation where we can stimulate in our own mind the dopamine. And so that's daydreaming. In fact, that's why God said the imagination of men's hearts were evil continuously. In other words, God said do this and don't do that, and men may not have physically been able to do something, but in their imagination they were doing it. That's why adultery isn't just adultery when you do it physically. It is adultery when you imagine it in your own mind. God doesn't see it any different, because it's directly tied to your lust of pleasure more. See, lover of pleasure more than lover of God. You're in love with that dopamine moment. And that's what this is all about. That's all the world's got for pleasure. God gives us joy. Totally different. Joy is spiritual. Joy unspeakable. You can't explain it to people. And peace that transcends understanding. And so God is a spirit, and He created us as a living soul. So the dopamine doesn't deal with the soul. It deals with the flesh and the mind. But that's all the world has. All that's of the world, lust of the flesh, lust of the eyes, pride of life, is not of the Father, but is of the world. And so God did create us with this dopamine in our body, in the nervous system, and the desire to wanting of whatever is gratifying in the environment. So understanding that is key to understanding psychology and sociology and all the ologies of man, because that's all man's got to work with. Approach pleasure, chase after the stuffs of gratification, stimulates dopamine, and avoid pain. And so all of philosophy, we think philosophy is highfalutin stuff. No. If you're ever dissatisfied with the way things are, so it gets boring, and you start thinking about how they ought to be, there's the dopamine, that's philosophy. And so you're now thinking about how can I change my environment so I can get more drug. You know, I said 2-year-olds are nothing but druggies. They're just chasing dopamine. And they're learning. You know, you give them something to work on, and they're playing with it, and before long they get bored. It doesn't take very long, and say you give them something to write on, and they're writing, and they've scribbled all, they get all the drug they can off that piece of paper, and they look at the wall, and there's more. There's a dopamine heaven, and they go writing on the walls. And it may be the first time, if you never told them any different, they're just doing what's natural. But now you come in and you interfere with human nature, because you understand that loop. The nerve is activated, it gets to the brain, dopamine stimulated in the synaptic gap on the way to the brain and in the brain, and then you become aware of it, and then you look into the environment to what did it. That's why God gave us our eyes, not just so we wouldn't stub our toes, but we would look out and we see the pleasurable things that God has created. But now there's something in the environment that stimulates the dopamine. You look for it, you find it, and it's not enough to look at it. You want to acquire it. So if I can do the cognitive, that's natural. The affective, that's my eyes, imagination, the feelings are, I have feelings drawing me to that object. And then the psychomotor is the ability to acquire whatever object that is, so that I can then stimulate more dopamine. So it will stimulate more dopamine. So the environment stimulates the dopamine. If I can change the environment, I can guarantee the stimulation of dopamine. Stimulus response. That's Skinner, Pavlov, all that psychological stuff. And so what we have today is a culture that's focusing on human relationship. And that now is people being positive, not negative, because negative would be pain, positive would be the dopamine. And so we're to encourage one another in this world of augmenting pleasure. Now, that's not biblical, because when God created man, he put him in a garden with dopamine there. You know, he could see the trees, he could eat of them. You go to the restaurant, it's ambiance. You know, you don't like the food just piled in one big pile. You want it where there's color, there's taste, everything's special, unique, and somebody has spent effort to make sure the ambiance of the restaurant, the colors in the restaurant, the odors, everything, your body's senses are picking this stuff up, and it's a pleasurable experience. And so that's marketing today. Everywhere you look is to stimulate this dopamine. You go to the store and there's something that is pretty and it's shaped and it's stimulating. You want it. You know, there's that gratifying object. And you buy it and it could be a piece of junk. But now the store say, okay, you can take it back and get something else if you know. And so, but the objective is marketing is to this dopamine. It's approaching pleasure, avoiding pain. You're not just interested in selling a product. You are, the bottom line, by the way, is money. When you buy gifts for your kids, you go to the store. And they know, they spend time, the marketing world, on what children are interested in buying. And they then create the environment so that that product is, you know, on the screen, on TV, in the papers, on the radio, and that's hearing. But they do it in a way that it stimulates your imagination, and then you go buy it and give it to your children, and nothing wrong with that. You know, you have a birthday party and for your child, and they're having a good time with that toy. But then you take it away from them because you tell them, you know, it's time to put it up, and they don't do that. And what you do is that when you do that, you're doing the very same thing that God did to Adam in the garden. Righteousness. Now, righteousness in its true sense can only be given to us by God. because only God is righteous in and of himself. We're not righteous in and of ourselves. Now, psychology and sociology would say that we have the potential to be if we can remove whatever prevents us from being human, pure human. That's that dialectic dopamine cycle. Approach pleasure, avoid pain. But the father comes in, or the mother, and says, you can't write on the wall, you can't do this, do this, and don't do that. And that's what God did to Adam. He introduced to Adam a system of righteousness, which meant that righteousness was not found in Adam, but it is in God who created Adam, and then gives Adam a command, as a parent gives a child a command. And that's not enough, because you can tell your children not to do something, and if there's no force, they'll just ignore you after a while, because there's no pain. So they can just do whatever they want to do. But then God said to Adam, you know, if you eat thereof, the day you eat thereof, you will die. Dying, you will die. And the same thing you do as a parent when your child is, you tell them they can do something, but then you say, well, you can't do this. Because if you do this, then you're grounded. You know, if you do this, you're going to be spanked. You know, there's a consequence. There's a cause and effect. There's accountability to a higher authority. And that, it's important to understand that the dialectic is two or more. Didactic is one. The patriarch is one. There's one father. And then we find in Scripture, one Father, one Son, the only begotten Son of God, one Holy Spirit, one word. It's not two or three words. It's not diversity. It is one. And that's important to understand, because socio-psychologists know the only way you can deliver men from one, the conscience, a top-down, right-wrong, patriarchal paradigm, is to get two or more. And so dialectic means two. Dialectic is that correlates to dialogue. And so dialogue is in line with the children, not the father. Because the father preaches and he teaches. Preaching is, this is right and that's not. And teaching is, okay, here's how you do what's right. He's not so much teaching on what to do wrong. He's just teaching on doing what's right. Set your affection on things above. Set your affection on doing what's right, not on things below, on doing what's wrong. And so that's the role of the office of a patriarchal system, the traditional father's position. God told Adam, rule. See, that's the patriarchal paradigm. Told Cain when he was, you know, thinking about sinning, you know, sin lies at the door, and you will rule over it. And the requirements of elder. He rules his home well. Now, ruling is not tied to the approach pleasure, avoid pain. Ruling is you've been given a job and accountability to someone, and so therefore, under that their office, you have an office, and you hold those who are under your authority to the same system. Do right, don't do wrong. It's an either or. It's black, white, sheep, goats, heaven, hell, above, below. Now, when the parent has to chasten a child, he has feelings. You know, dad or mom, they have feelings. It hurts. You know, and you tell your child, you know, this is going to hurt me more than you. Well, the child doesn't see it that way. Because children cannot understand the father. Adam didn't understand. You can't eat of that tree, and if you do, dying, you will die. It wasn't something they understood. That's why we're not to lean to our own understanding. Because the only thing we can understand is the approach, pleasure, avoid, pain, heresiarchal paradigm of change. That's all you and I can understand. That's our experience of our carnal human nature. And so, as God introduced himself to Adam, he created Adam. All he had going was approach pleasure, avoid pain. And then God comes in and says, you can't do this. And if you do, you're going to die. You can do this over here, because God's not against pleasure. It's just that pleasure is not the criterion for determining what's right and wrong. God is. Just as a father sets the standard, the criterion for what's right and what's wrong for the children. And that produces a top-down system in that child's thoughts and in their actions, and it produces a conscience. Now, in this patriarchal paradigm, this top-down system, this system of righteousness, again, not righteousness because only God is righteous, but the parent is actually performing in an office that shows those children that there is righteousness. And so in the temporal world, the child is becoming aware of a spiritual world. You know, there's right and there's wrong. Now, dad can be wrong, and the child is to obey their parents in the Lord. So if the child knows that, okay, dad, you're asking me to go against God who created you, I can't. Now, you've given me a command that is counter to what God says. Now, if it's not counter to what God says, then, you know, I can... if it's just something that is, if it's not going to harm others, destroy their soul, because that's really what God's all about. He loves us. For God so loved the world, He sent His only begotten Son, that whosoever believeth in Him would not perish, but have everlasting life. All have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. All of us have done dialectic reasoning. All of us have chased after, chase the dragon. That's our human nature, and so we're all condemned to begin with. We're all wicked. The heart is deceitful above all things and desperately wicked. The deceit is, we think, well, our heart is good, but we only see our heart in the moment of compromise. You know, just a little compromise. It's not a big. And that, by the way, is the key to progressivism. You don't want to push a person to where their conscience kicks in. Because we can compromise to a point from the Father's standards, and our conscience not kick in. And that was that little area in there that a facilitator has to be able to identify, because if he goes too far, then you're going to kick out. He can't keep you in the room. He can't keep the process going. And that's why you take years and years of training to identify body language, spoken words, with people in the room. Map the room to make sure that you don't have the wrong constellation of people, the wrong number of people in that room who have a very strong conscience. Because if they have a very strong conscience, you can't do this process of change. Because a process of change can only tie itself to approach, pleasure, avoid, pain. And so, as I began, I said, well, okay, the Father is the thesis. He's the one who sets the position. You would find this in a traditional classroom. Write a thesis paper, position paper. If you wrote, I feel and I think, see, that's approach, pleasure, avoid, pain, I would flunk you. Because I want you to say, I know. How do you know? Well, Dad said. The scientist said. You go to the books. I would send you the books. Truth is not within you. Truth is not found in the flesh. Jumping around here a little bit, see what happened in the garden was Eve found that truth was in the flesh. See, lust, flesh, lust, the eyes, pride, life. Because she found that the tree of knowledge of good and evil was just like all the other trees. Now, that's temporal. If you're a scientist, you're just going material. In fact, that tree was unique because by eating of that tree, you now had control of something that you didn't have control of before. And it stimulated dopamine just like all the other trees. So once she did the dialectic process, she was, it's not God's tree, it's our tree. She was the first socialist. She was the first communist. See, all the trees are common. And now if all the trees are common and God said, okay, that tree you can't have, but all the rest you can, then God's irrational. And if you do it scientifically, God is irrational. And that was my training to make sure your children understood in this class that I was teaching them, getting their opinion out, how they feel, what they think. The conclusion is that you as a parent telling your child, you can't do this, you can do this, but you can't do that, you are irrational. And once she realized that God was irrational, and then he became irrelevant. You can do whatever's of human nature. She just did human nature. She ate the fruit of the tree of knowledge of good and evil. With no guilty conscience whatsoever. She was godless. Very short time, just those six verses. That was all accomplished in those six verses. That is the role of a facilitator. And what they do is they don't start thesis with the father who gives a position and threatens to chasten. They start with the children. They start with approach, pleasure, avoid, pain. How do you feel? What do you think? Language in that environment. Whether it's children or adults, it all has the same effect. It removes everyone in that room who willingly participates away from the Father's command and the fear of His judgment for disobedience. So that's sort of a nutshell of the effect of the dopamine and the dialectic process in our lives. We'll continue on the other side of this break.